Metallica, here they come, the kings of metal!
Hey, this is Edwin Atwater, conductor of SNM2, and you're listening to Metal Up Your Podcast.
Welcome to Melody Podcast. I'm Ethan Luck.
And I'm Clint Wells.
And this is episode 271, and we're going to have a, this might be a mild tangent city. We might just dip into downtown for a little bit and check it out. But we're going to be talking about Kirk Hammett's first solo release called Portals.
Portals! Shout out to all the Melody Podcast family out there who wrote to us on the social saying, he definitely listens.
Could you imagine if that's why he...
Named it Portals?
Maybe he dipped into a few episodes and heard us yell the email portal. And he was like, you know, Portals would be a great name for my project or whatever.
He was either going to call it, you know, Hulkster in Heaven or Portals.
That's right. Yeah.
I think those were the working titles. Maybe the Outlaw Torben was up.
But I think he had an issue with the Hulkster where he wanted royalties to use the Hulk, you know, Hulkster
name.
There
was a copyright infringement, so he had to go with the other inside joke of Metal Beat Podcasting. He called it Portals.
Right. And unfortunately, we did not trademark the name Portals when we started the show.
I know.
Big mistake on our part.
Big mistake. Big missed opportunity. Well, so yeah, so for those of you joining us for the first time, we're an All Metallica podcast, 6 years strong. Can't take that
That's right, we are in year six.
We put the time in, baby. Ethan and I are pretty busy touring musicians, and we make time every week to talk about our favorite metal band, which is clearly Metallica.
Clearly. If you haven't figured that out yet after 271 episodes, then maybe you're in a different portal. I don't know.
And this is interesting. You know, like, Kirk, we're gonna do the whole episode on this, but yeah, we will be talking about Portals because it's... I mean, does it mean anything? Does it not mean anything? There's going to be an email later that's discussing, like, you know, is this a signal of the end of Metallica? What does it mean that the you know, the reins are loosening up? What does it mean creatively? Kirk's missing phone. He wasn't really that creatively involved in Hardwired. The boys are making a new album. We're going to get into all that, but let's knock out some of this housekeeping. First of all, I want to say thank you to Brian Gibbons, who became a patron last week, but this week... he increased his pledge.
Now, that's called taking the initiative right there.
Right. Well, what he did was he got on the train, okay? The Patreon is a train in our minds.
Yeah, all aboard.
And we call it the hobo train because we're all the hobos on the train and we're hanging out and we're like, you know, we drink hooch out of the ground that was buried for, you know, when we went on. We're on the train and it comes back around several times, mm-hmm. right? We drink buried hooch. We have the little sack with the stick with the sack on the end that I
yeah,
have
that's right.
a single banana in. You have like a can of Campbell's soup from the 70s. And
still good, by the way.
He got on the ride and was like, I need to up my coinage here because this ride is too fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, you get on the train and all of a sudden you've realized, oh, I've been upgraded to first class.
Right.
That's what the podcast is. It's first class.
Right, 100%. Your seat fully reclines.
Yeah, in the biz, they call it a lay flat. And we got plenty of lay flats for everybody.
Even though the flight's not long. I mean, the flight's about an hour and a half each week. It's not like it's not like an intercontinental or a transcontinental flight to another, you know, to another continent.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an hour and a half long. But yeah, we let you lay down flat if you want. We serve you up that free champagne if you want it, hot coffee, mm-hmm. hot towel.
A hot towel, that's right.
Here's a question.
Lemon-scented.
When you fly first class, which I know is often because you like to roll hard, you roll heavy.
I roll real heavy.
What do you do with the hot cloth?
I usually just kind of damp my face a little bit. Just kind of, I don't like, I'm not sitting there, you know, scrubbing like I'm in the freaking bathroom. But it's just a nice little, you know, get that initial airplane gunk off your face. Then maybe like kind of let it rest on your face a little bit. Absorb the warmth.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's kind of what I do. mind you, I have not been in first class in like 4 years, but it was fucking awesome.
I've never done it. And someone gave me really good advice. They were like, unless you're able to do it a lot, do not do it, because it's so fucking awesome that it will bum you out to go back to like coach, you know?
Now, I'll say, like, on a normal, you know, within the continental U.S. flight, first class is cool if it's, you know, if it's long. Like, when you're, like, business class on an overseas flight, that's where, like, the lay-flat seats are there, and mm-hmm. you can just kick off your shoes and literally just lay down and fall asleep. Now, regular first class in the U.S., it's nice. I mean, for a guy like my size, it's the extra leg space, the wider seat, you know, free drinks, whatnot. Don't get me wrong. That's awesome. But the international one is where it's at, because that's where you're laying down. That's where it's like you're getting like two actual meals, and you know. But going, you know, if you're doing that and then going back to coach after that, it's like going. It's like touring on a bus, and then all of a sudden you got to do a van tour. It's like, right. Oh man, it's a little weird. But there is, you know, you and I aren't like cocky people and look down upon people. But there is this feeling when you're in first class when everyone's walking past you, where you're thinking like,
what a loser.
I'm so glad I'm not going back there. At the same time, I just feel, because, you know, in first class, you board first. I just feel nothing but judgment, especially if it's like, if like all my tattoos are showing, because, you know, people are not only in first class, but going back to coach, they're like, what is that idiot doing up here?
Yeah, I guess I don't assume that people have those kinds of stigmas like in 2022, but maybe they do. Here's the deal. Whenever I'm walking by them, I'm judging them too. I'm like, you rich fuckheads.
Yeah, exactly.
Fuck you.
And I'm not a rich fuckhead. I just happened to work for a band that put me up there on international flights. So, yeah, but yeah. Hey, it felt good and I loved it.
Well, all that to say, Brian Gibbons has he has increased his pledge into first class. And also Jeffy T became a patron. Thank you guys so much for becoming patrons. We love our patrons. You guys really make, you guys keep the lights on over at Metal Up Your Podcast Industries. And
that's right.
We really appreciate that. We're on all the socials. You can keep up with our tour dates and whatever shenanigans are happening, Metallica news on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. We're on Amazon Music and Spotify, you fucking demon. When will I be free of you, you fucking demon? So that's where you can find us. And the easiest way to get a hold of us is through our email address. It's been that way for 6 years. It's Metal Up Your Podcast show@gmail.com. We love hearing from everybody. It could be anything. In fact, we've got several emails coming up about beanstalks, so you never know what's going to happen. And, you know, to pay homage to our beloved Kirk Hamster with his new solo project coming out, we will and for the near future be entering
the
You want to get us started? You want to get this fucking party started, dude?
Listen, man, we played a show together last night. We woke up early to knock this out before we hit the road again tomorrow with Morgan Wade. And just for a change, I'm going to start the email portal.
Well, let's talk about the show we played last night.
Actually, we should do that real quick.
That was actually pretty fun. So we were just out on the road with our homie Morgan Wade, and two of our shows got canceled because there was a crazy snowstorm, I guess, up in the Northeast. We mm-hmm. were going to do Pittsburgh and Detroit. Right. We had to turn the bus around after New York, which I'm glad we got to play that New York. The two shows we played in Boston and New York were sick.
They were awesome, yeah.
We had to turn the bus around. My friend Rachel puts on a gig in town called Rachel Loy's Shit List, mm-hmm. and it's a play on you're on her shit list, naughty, naughty, but it's also a play on hit list, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, what it is she takes the best session players in town, and that is the house band. And then she takes her favorite writers in town, and she features them for two songs. So you have a smoking killer band. You have these great artists. They come and play two songs. It's kind of can be a who's who of Nashville.
Sure.
Even if you're not playing it, generally the crowd is filled with other artists and musicians in town because it's a cool thing to go see. The last one that she did, our drummer Parker and I and my wife Isabel, we went and saw it just because some friends of ours were playing in it, and Tom Bukovac was playing, and like Tom Bukovac's like the greatest guitar player in town, blah, blah, blah.
He's the dude, yeah.
So Rachel calls me while Ethan and I are on the road with Morgan and says, hey, the opening band, which was Tom Bukovac's band.
Right, yeah.
They had a COVID. One of their members got COVID. They can't do it. So she wanted my band with Rachel called Attention Machine to open the show. Well, we couldn't really figure out how to do it because we were on the road and we weren't getting back until blah, blah, blah. Well, our shows got canceled, So I called up Rachel and said, hey, me and Ethan are available because Ethan plays in Attention Machine. And so next thing we know, we're opening the Shitless gig, which is really fun.
Yeah, super fun. And that was the first time I played that venue, Third and Lindsley, here in town.
Which is pretty wild. So I mean, it's not Ryman status, but I am surprised you've never played Third and Lindsley.
As someone who's played the Ryman, it was great to play Third and Lindsley, okay? But, you know, I've seen the top of the mountain, and it was fun. It was really fun. It reminded me of this venue that I'd never played in Southern California, but I went to a lot with my dad to see shows called the Coach House.
Mm-hmm.
Same kind of size stage, seated venue, you know, tables.
Is that in San Diego?
That's in San Juan Capistrano, so a little north of there, South Orange County. You may have played that
before. I think I've played that, yes.
Yeah. And similar thing, you know, it's like the old school 2-drink minimum. You know, you can order a quesadilla and some chicken strips to your table while you're watching a band. So
there's a theater in Seattle called the Triple Door. I don't know if you've ever played there. And it's definitely one of those gigs where like people are like getting like soup while you're playing. It's like,
right.
It's not quite a table 7, your pizza's ready type joke. It's like a little nicer, but it's just weird to be playing. I've played that gig with Bob Schneider a couple times, and he has some pretty raunchy, like rowdy music. It's pretty weird to play that material while people are slurping on fucking soup right in front of you.
Yeah, I know, right?
Okay. Well, so then what happened is the house guitar player for the Shitless. So we played our set. Our set was great. We basically played the record that we wrote.
Right.
We don't have many more songs than that. And, but then the house band had to learn like 20 songs because there was like, you know, 10 artists each playing 2 songs. Well, that guitar player got COVID too. So Rachel split up the guitar duties between the other people that happened to be there who play guitar. So I did like 4 or 5 songs. My friend Derek Barr did several songs. So man, it turned into a whirlwind, but
yeah,
super
man.
Fun. Like the backstage of that is so fun because everyone's mingling and hanging out and,
yeah, it was super fun. Yeah, I just did the Attention Machine stuff with Clint and Rachel and them and hung out for a little bit. I bailed a little early. I was just tired and wanted to go home, to be honest. But
yeah, no problem.
But it was fun hanging with a few people, met some new, you know, musician friends, caught up with a couple old ones. I had a great time.
Yeah, man. Lucy Silvas was there, Matthew Perriman-Jones, Cat Higgins. Mm-hmm.
John Bon Jovi.
Richie Sambora was there, but him and John Bon Jovi sort of have a, you know, they have a feud. So they were in separate dressing rooms, of course.
Yeah, it was really tense backstage.
Bozo the Clown was there, I believe.
Was this really where Gallagher was there?
Gallagher
fruit?
There was like a bunch of like, chewed up watermelon and shit. And anyway, it was a fun evening. And that's kind of why we're doing the Portal Speculation Tangent City, because really we only have today. Tomorrow we're on a plane to Philadelphia to do more Morgan shows. So
that's right. Yeah,
it's pretty fun over here in our world. We're getting to work up in this bitch.
We're keeping
and you're
it busy.
about to do like a month of touring with Reliant K.
Yeah, it's slightly split up. So like Clint said, we're out with Morgan this weekend, and then I jump right into Reliant K rehearsals next week, and then we go out for our first 4 shows next weekend. Home for 2 weeks, and then there's no Morgan full band shows in March, so I'm doing the whole 3-week Reliant K tour, which I've had quite a few listeners reach out to me that are going to be coming to some shows, like Angelo's coming to the Houston show, so that'll be fun.
Oh, I know Angelo's coming to that Reliant K show. That was probably a huge band for him, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I think so, but I got him on the old guest list, and hopefully he'll get a good spot on the rail, and I can just throw picks at his face.
Well, I'm starting a new Christian rock band called Reliant J.
Oh.
And I'm going to be touring those same markets in similar venues, probably really close to where you're playing. So
we'll see what happens.
We'll have to just see what happens. See how the chips fall on that one. Nashville, Tennessee, based atheist podcaster Clint Wells has started a new Christian rock band called Reliant J.
Amazing. I want to hear that band, actually.
I actually wrote quite a few religious rock songs in my day. I was in a Christian rock band called The Blue Floor.
The Blue Floor.
Because the floor of our church was, you guessed it, blue.
Blue.
And we thought that was cool.
It's funny to name a band based off something just in your surroundings. Like for instance, right now, I'm starting a new band called The Red Wall.
Hell yeah. Red Wall's cool.
Red Wall's kind of cool, actually.
Yeah, it is pretty cool.
Walls in my studio painted red.
And it could mean several things. The Red Wall of Oppression.
That's right, man. The Red Wall of the Portal.
Speaking of portals, let's start out. Let's get our emails going here.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We are doing that. Okay, our first email is from Oskari Imonen. Hey, guys. Haven't written in a while, but just wanted to let you guys know I would absolutely climb a magic beanstalk if one grew. That's it. Hope you guys and the listeners have a great day and week. Oskari from Finland, New Jersey. So yeah, there was a lot of discussion on the beanstalk last week. If it the magic beans were planted in the ground and the beanstalk grew into the clouds, would you climb it? Me and Clint said, no, we don't want to get so high before we're terrified and come back down.
I mean, again, yeah. I mean, if that beanstalk grew into the clouds where giants make playthings of our thoughts, that means nothing known is true. Everything I thought was true is over. All reality mm-hmm. is completely changed.
That's right.
So I just think I would... I hate to say it, but I think I'd be too scared. I think I would be scared for my family and my daughter. I would be sitting at home going, what does this mean? What does it mean now?
Right.
Because here's what I'm not doing. If a beanstalk grows into heaven where giants roam, here's what I'm not doing. Going into work.
Exactly.
Like everything changes, Ethan. I'm telling you, everything after the beanstalk is different.
Now, let me ask you this. Would it be possible for anything from up there to climb down the beanstalk?
Well, isn't that the whole story? Isn't the kind of story that the giants come down?
I mean, it's a portal.
I was gonna say, listen, when you open a portal, it's a two-way door, dude.
That's right.
So, I mean, I want to be the guy that fearlessly climbs it. I just don't. I think I would be scared out of my fucking mind. But not Oskar.
I would just stand on the ground and watch. Yeah, that's right.
Oscar's like, I'm climbing that motherfucker. No hesitation. You know why? Because he's a stone cold killer. And you know how I know he's a stone cold killer? Because he's a patron.
That's right. And I just realized that I was saying his name wrong.
Well, no, it is Oskari.
Okay.
But I think he goes by Oscar.
Okay, we'll just do Oscar then. Sorry about that.
I did a Metal Tales with Oscar recently. Had a great time hanging out with him.
Awesome.
All right. Thanks, Oscar. You win the blue ribbon today, baby. Because you're going to climb.
Right.
You're going to be the guy that's willing to climb it. Because here's the other deal. I mean, I'm not going into work. Nothing known is true. All reality is completely changed. But I do need someone to go up and report back.
Exactly. Well, and here's another thought, too. Even if you planted those beans in the ground and the beanstalk grew farther than the eye could see, past the clouds, to me, that would be enough to be like, okay, nothing is true anymore.
That's what I'm saying.
I wouldn't have to see the giants.
So you're saying
giants, the clouds.
Yeah, right. Just the fact that it grew into heaven. Yeah, that's enough. I mean, I guess if you climb it and then just nothing's up there, I guess I'll go to work. But
that's still a pretty amazing thing. Like I feel like farmers would be flocking to this. Like we have to see these.
Yeah,
magic
it would be
beans,
an agri. You know? Yeah, it'd be an agricultural, miracle. And who knows the implications for farming and for the food supply chain would be. Amazing. And we probably
That's
win
right.
a fucking Nobel Prize for it. So,
and I mean, one of our backyards would be a tourist destination and we could make some serious money off that. Hey, come see the beanstalk.
Oh boy. We're turning into a little bit of jangle in our pockets. All right. Mark Potter writes in, he's also weighing in on the old beanstalk. He says, mirror upon thy wall. He says, so the question's been put forth to climb or not to climb a magic beanstalk. Myself, I'd be curious, but with my fear of heights, I'd probably stay on the ground and wait until someone did ascend with transmitting via Facebook Live.
Okay.
That's the thing is, someone would put that shit on Twitch or something. That's what it would be. It'd be the TikTok beanstalk. He says, or maybe I'd climb high enough just to drop a deuce in a bird's eye below me. A little payback for all the years.
Hey, there you go.
He says, also, I've ordered both the hardback and audio CD versions of Johnny Z's book, What a Life. I hope Cliff Burton's crashing on his couch once more. Break the spell or become the doll. Mark Potter, how about that sign-off?
Yeah, man, that's pretty... That's
little,
amazing.
Little fixer sign-off.
Break the spell or become the doll.
Mirror, mirror on the wall. Break the spell or become the doll, see?
That was a little bit of Medieval Guy with combining entire eras. Okay, well, thanks, Mark. I'm with you, dude. I would wait for someone to just put it on TikTok or something.
Yeah, let's get someone to report back. Or, do you ever get suggested videos on whatever social media platform where it's just people climbing, like free climbing some, vertical wall in the middle of the mountains with, no harness and stuff?
We just watched the documentary. You should check it out on Netflix called The Alpinist.
I'll bet I would get numb legs watching it.
It's funny. Isabel got that too. Isabel was getting vertigo or butterflies in her stomach just watching it.
Yeah.
It's weird. It doesn't really affect me that way. It's wild to see though. And so there was a really big one that I think got nominated for an Oscar called Free Solo.
Okay. I've heard
that a couple
one, yeah.
of years ago. And this guy just, he climbed the highest, whatever the fuck with no ropes.
Yeah.
So that guy's in this new one. So this new one's called The Alpinist and it's about a dude who climbs shit, but he climbs in ice and snow.
Crazy.
So basically, he climbs frozen waterfalls.
That's terrifying to me.
Yeah, it's weird. It doesn't really wig me out, but it's weird to see.
I mean, I would watch it. It doesn't terrify me to watch it. It would terrify me to try it.
I'll tell you, speaking of that, so, you know, we have this Oculus. We have this, like, virtual reality thing that we got in the pandemic.
Yeah.
And it's really powerful. I like to use it to watch movies because the apps in it, basically, I'm sitting in a movie theater watching mm-hmm. a huge screen movie. I don't know. I don't understand the technology, but it's awesome. Right. And then I watch a lot of NBA on it, especially in the playoffs. But a lot of what I like to do, this is so weird to say out loud, is I like to just sit in the bottom of the ocean.
You're in a safe place.
With all the animals around me and shit. And then you can also just sort of float in space and shit. It's cool. Yeah. It's called an Oculus. They had when Free Solo came out, they did a thing with Free Solo where you're on that mountain with him. And when you look down, you're on, you know, whatever, El Capitan or whatever they call that shit.
Man, I've done some VR stuff with our friend Jack O'Shea in the past. And there's a few things that he had me do where it's like, you know, you're on top of a building, like, okay, no big deal. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, robot aliens start attacking the city. And then you look down and you're just standing on a beam.
Yeah.
Like, whatever, 100 stories up. And yeah. I legit, like, went down to the ground and put my hands on the ground.
Yeah.
It's fun.
It's scary. There's one called Plank where you basically walk on a plank. There's a couple where you can, like, fly a jetpack around, like, Chicago.
Yeah. So if you ever see Clint Creek, oh, dude, you can find one where you can cruise a magic carpet around.
Oh, hell yeah, dude. Get Torb involved.
Just feel what Torben feels.
I do one sometimes where I'm on a roller coaster in space.
That's awesome. Most people don't know, but Clint wrote the Lunar Satan record. Like, we talk about it, you know, space metal.
Oh.
Satan in space. He actually wrote it with his goggles on while in space.
Well, look, I mean, I'm just going to go ahead and put this out there. So those are the only two emails in the email portal this week dealing with the Beanstalk question. I need more feedback on the Beanstalk.
That's right.
You knucklehead. So metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com. I want more emails about the Beanstalk. I want to know what you do. I want to know why you do it. And I want to know what would happen if all things known were no longer true.
That's right. I would like to know too. Let's do it.
Okay. Our next email.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Next email is from Guy Sproul. He says, hey, Clint and Ethan, I heard you guys talking about stems, and I thought you might be interested in this website. It's a website called remixpacks.ru. The Metallica stems are amazing. As far as I know, most of the stems available come from the Guitar Hero video games. Love the show. Keep up the amazing work from Guy. So I checked this out.
Yeah, and?
And I actually downloaded the Dire's Eve stems. So it's very minimal.
Yeah.
So for those who don't know, it's not a multi-track. It's not every guitar part
They're
separated.
In, like, groups, right?
They're groups. That's what stems are, yeah. So the drum stems is literally just a stereo. It's actually a mono mix of just Lars's kit from Justice.
Dude, don't crack open the door on stereo mono.
Oh, I won't do that. I mean, I think, well, these ones should have been, I wish they were in stereo because that's how the record is, but.
I'm just kidding because I'm on this insane Beatles thing where I'm
oh yes,
getting all the stereo and mono versions of every record they made, so.
I'm seeing it in real time, for very firsthand.
You know what? We should actually talk about BDO.
Oh, BDO, Boys Day Out?
Should we talk about BDO?
Listen, this is kind of a free forum. Unfortunately, Paul's not here.
Paul?
For a bit of a tangent city, but like I said, man, we're exiting into tangent city just for a little bit. We're not sitting down for a long lunch or anything, but BDO has been something we designated that, you know, that the boys in Morgan Wayne's band do on a day off or maybe pre-show. It's just go cruise around a city. There's no real set plans other than maybe hitting a record store, get some coffee. But we had a great BDO in New York City last week.
Honestly, I've had a lot of BDOs in various bands I was in. And in fact, some of the best BDOs of my life were in the Rodney Atkins band.
Yeah.
Which you got to meet Derek last night. I was really stoked about
that. Yeah, Derek was a sweetie pie.
But I have to say this, dude. Our BDO in New York City this last weekend was my favorite BDO that I've ever had.
Dude, it was, I mean,
so
it was great.
We had the whole day in New York. We played Boston the night before. The bus rolled at like 2 a.m. So we woke up in the city. We woke up at Irving Plaza where we would play that night.
Right.
And so able to sleep in a little bit. I think we got moving around 9:30 or 10. And you went and found a coffee shop, but then we found a couple of record stores and they were all in the village, kind of close to each other.
Right.
What was like a 20-minute walk? Not far
away.
Oh,
something like that, which doesn't seem long when you're in a city like New York.
We go to this record store and it's, well, a couple of them were closed. And then we found another little breakfast spot. We had a nice little bagel vibe.
Right.
We go to this record store. It's close. We're like, oh, maybe it opens at noon or whatever. And we wait for it to open. The affable dude shows up. It's kind of rainy. And he looks at us just huddled under his awning thing like we were insane.
Right.
Jamal was his name, right?
Jamal, that's right.
He opens the thing. We come in. I was looking for these really specific Beatles albums, the U.S. released Capitol albums, which is different than their albums that came out in the U.K. It's a whole saga that I will not bore anyone with. Maybe I'll do another Beatles Metal Up Your Podcast Radio and explain that. So I tell Jamal immediately. Oh, no. The first thing I asked him about was that Dylan Mono pressings.
I was about to bring that up. Yeah. It was in the window.
So in the window, how much is that Dylan in the window? And he has this. So Dylan put out a box set called the Mono Pressing. So it's all his first 10 records in mono, remastered. It's a beautiful box set, no longer in print. And I was like, man, I really think I need that and want that. So it's immediately I'm riffing with Jamal. I'm like, Jamal, what's up, baby? What's up with that Dylan Mono box set?
Right.
And he's giving it back to me, and he knows what it's worth, and he offered me a price that wasn't going to work for me. So I ended up telling him, I was like, well, listen, I'm looking for these Beatles records. I was like, you got any Beatles? He's like, he used a lot of profanity. I won't repeat some of that, but he's like, right. Heck yeah, I do. He takes me to a tiny little back room where there is an entire crate filled with Beatles records, all that I'm looking for. Not even for sale. Yeah. And you went back in that room, right? It was like an office, but it was crammed with albums.
It was basically a desk, a tiny desk with a computer and a chair in front of it, and just surrounded by boxes of records. There was even a stack of records on the chair. It was nothing but records in a tiny little office space.
So I'm telling Jamal, I'm like riffing with him like from back there, and I'm like, dude, you've got everything I need. You better go easy on me. He's laughing. I think he recognized you from one of the bands you were in. We ended up just staying there for like an hour. We had a crazy rapport with him. He gave me a great deal, some great Beatles records. We ended up getting a picture with him, and it was his birthday.
That's right. It was his birthday, yeah.
And he started following us on Instagram stuff. Long story short, he ended up coming to the show that night on his birthday.
Yeah. Do you have like friends or family you want to celebrate with? And he closed the store, I'm guessing, a little early and came to the show.
No, dude. Like within 40 minutes of us being there, he was wanting us to go get a drink with him when he closed.
No, it was awesome.
He was like, you guys should come get a drink with me when I close. But we were playing at that time. So anyway, we had a great record store. Oh, he gave you a Fugees record.
He gave me a Fugees record that is warped. And because I saw it sitting out there, and he grabbed, it's a double album. So he grabs the other one, gives it to me. He goes, you can have that. I was like, what? He's like, it's all messed up. You know, it's all warped. And so I looked at it, and I have a thing that, you know, I can flatten records with. So I was like, hell yeah, I'll take this. And I ended up buying that Black Pumas record.
You got a Black Pumas. So we just had a great record store experience, like one of the best ones I've ever had. Just a great character who made a new friend. And then we get on the trains because we're going into Hell's Kitchen in Manhattan for what I was most excited about hipping you guys to, which is a little thing called Rudy's.
Rudy's.
Now, here's what Rudy's is. Now, I described it basically as a paradise, and I wasn't wrong, was I?
You were not wrong.
So here's what Rudy's is. In the heart of Hell's Kitchen, New York is extremely expensive. Everything's $1 million there.
That's right. Yeah.
It's a very expensive city to hang out in. But Rudy's, this little oasis in the desert, all the beers are like $4. You just get a Bud Light for $4. You can't even get a Bud Light for $4 in Nashville. And right. Here's the kicker, though. It's a little dive bar. With every drink you get, ding, 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 a free hot dog.
That's right. And you walk in, and it's straight up like they have the little roller thing like at 7-Eleven with all the hot dogs. And there's stacks and stacks of buns above it. I got one of their own, like, Rudy's brewed beers. Not sure what company brewed it. That was $3.
Wow.
Like, their own beer.
Well, so we ended up killing, like, what, a couple hours there. And we got to mention our homie Johnny Sword was with us on BDO.
That's right. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no BDO without Johnny Sword.
So, you know, we're condensing about 6 hours into a brief little story, but it was just a great BDO. And then as we were walking to the train station to go back to soundcheck in Times Square, we look up, and there's our boss, Morgan Wade, on one of those big-ass screens in New York City. Mm-hmm. And we got a little picture for BDO.
Well, not only did we get a picture, we saw it, and we all started freaking out. Like, no way. Like, that's awesome. Look how huge that is. And then it went to, like, another ad. And we waited for, what, maybe 10 minutes?
I was going to leave that part out, but...
Well, I just wanted to explain, and not that Morgan's listening, but we dedicated some time to wait for that thing to pop back up so we could take a group photo in front of it.
Anyway, it was a great BDO. If you ever see us out on tour and we're just gallivanting through the city, holding hands, laughing and singing, you know, musicals, it's because it's BDO.
Exactly, exactly. If you've ever seen the show Bosom Buddies from the early 80s with Tom Hanks.
Exactly.
If you go on YouTube and watch the intro to that show, that was basically us.
Right. Except there were three of us.
There was three of us, yeah.
So so if you want these stems, by the way, getting back to the stem talk, the website is remix with an X, R-E-M-I-X, PAX, P-A-C-K-S, .ru. And what, you can just easily download them? Are there other bands and stuff too?
There's tons of stuff on there. I even looked up just for fun. I was like, I wonder if Demon Hunter, whatever, is on here. And there was two Demon Hunter stems on there. I was like, whoa.
Wow.
So basically what I did was just for fun, like you can download it. It's not like you just get the tracks. It basically downloads a file that plays in that app VLC.
Oh, yeah.
And it shows up as a playlist to where you can just click on each one. Now, of course, I want to take this a step further. So I downloaded another program that would basically unpackage that initial file as WAV files.
You're like a hacker now.
Then I imported that into Logic, and I was like mixing in the bass and stuff. But I mean, it's Jason's bass. If you want to hear what his bass sounds like, check it out. I mean, it's fucking badass too.
You're a hacker, dude. Hack the
planet.
I'm
a hacker. Have you ever seen that movie Hackers, everybody? It's really good.
I fucking love Hackers, and I dipped back in about a year ago, and it's still great, even though the technology is ludicrous now.
Right. Like, how do we bypass this dial-up connection? We're going to hack Ask Jeeves.
Oh, boy. Well, thank you, Guy, for the remix link, and everyone have fun. Okay, next, we have Chris Cockamese, who everyone will know played bass on Lunar Satan. Crush it, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
And he works with a really cool YouTube channel called The Bass Channel. You guys really need to check that out, especially you bass players out there. Here's what Chris has to say. He says, what's up, brothers? Chris here with a humble deep cut dive request for Broken Beat and Scarred. I recently shot a bass cover with my friend Josh Dubois, or Yoshi Dubois, and I didn't quite realize how much is going on in the rhythm section of this track. For instance, the bass keeps playing the intro line well after the intro has passed, but now in a totally different feel. Or maybe I've just been hearing the intro wrong this whole time. He says, like the shortest straw phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
Ever since shooting these videos, I've really been on the Death Magnetic train, and this is definitely a standout track to me. There's some pretty intense bass parts across the entire album, and it's a shame most of them get lost in the mix. Thank you for making the premier Metallica podcast in the world. It really makes my Vegas to LA drives much more bearable. Peace, adios, and thank you.
Well, once again, I mean, it's just confirmation that we are a first-class podcast with lay-flat chairs.
Exits are here, 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 and here.
Yes, please return your seats and trays to the full upright and locked position before takeoff.
We would like to remind you that tampering with the smoke alarm in the bathroom is a federal crime, and there is no smoking on this flight.
And the last rule of MUIP Airlines is have fun always.
Have fun always. If you're gonna shout it to a cop outside the bus.
Yes.
Wasn't that in Vegas?
That was in Las Vegas, yeah.
Look at this. Look at us bringing it all together. The concentric nature of the podcast, because this guy, Chris Cockamese, is in Vegas as well.
It's the circle of life.
Now, listen, I watched this video. I'm telling you, you guys who like bass and bass gear, you got to check out the Bass Channel, because these dudes can play their They play their little butts off. It always sounds great. Their gear demos are fun. And we're going to actually put in a little clip of so they have them just playing the song with, like, you know, with everything up, but they have the bass kind of like dialed in. And then there's a version of it with just the drums and the bass. So we're going to play a little bit of that so you can get a little taste of it.
Yeah, check this out.
We'll be right back.
I mean,
now
those dudes are pro.
Those dudes are killer players, man. And and here's the deal too. Like I watched it this morning, and I've been saying this for years, and it just confirmed it for me. Death Magnetic is no joke. It is the spiritual sequel to Injustice for All.
Mm-hmm.
It is as proggy and complicated and insane as Injustice for All.
That's right.
They did not take a day off on that album, dude. Like, especially you know this as a songwriter, and like, you know, you've written heavy shit. It's just real easy to get a couple of great riffs together and be like, well, that's one song.
Yeah.
These guys, it's like every couple of bars in these songs on that album are insane.
And they could be their own songs per riff, you know?
And some might argue that they're kind of overloaded with that stuff, but what I like about it, what I have to imagine, and I would love to talk to James about it one day, but, and maybe this is actually more of a Lars question, but what I have to imagine is after Saint Anger, which by the way was a successful album, I mean, it mm-hmm. went number one in like 30 countries, and they did a massively successful stadium tour to support it, but they knew artistically it was a bit of a dip, right? And it's easily the, you know, their toughest album in their entire catalog. But you got to imagine they came off of that and they were like, we need to remind everybody that we are fucking killers.
Yeah, by the way.
Because that's, I mean, and I think that's what Chris is saying. He's like, when I start digging these songs, it gets me on the Death Magnetic train. And it is a shame that, like, I was thinking about this today. I don't know how to articulate this, Ethan. Maybe you can help me. Metallica is so huge and, like, good, and their songs are so good that, in a way, it's easy to overlook how intricate the songs are. Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense. Like, I've talked about this in the past where I was showing my dad Apocalyptica, the four cello players, and, you know, both of us, you know, especially him, because he's not a Metallica fan, I remember him telling me, I was playing him their version of Master of Puppets, especially getting to the bridge, and he was like, I didn't realize like how intricate these parts were and how beautiful some of them are. And I've thought the same thing when we've done deep cut dives or just over the years of learning certain Metallica songs, like Orion's a good example. Obviously, you can hear how cool it is, but once you really dive deep in a lot of that stuff, you're like, wow, like I didn't realize they were playing that. And it just blows me away that, you know, stuff like that or Justice was done and they're like in their 20s.
I think there's also, because the Beatles, and the analogies to the Beatles just continue to present themselves to me.
Of course,
Maybe I'm forcing that because it's just the two worlds I inhabit the most now. But they're the same way. And it's like this weird phenomenon where the songs are so good that you don't know how intricate the parts are. Like if you start unpacking Beatles songs, I mean, you may be hearing I Want to Hold Your Hand and Love Me Do. Go play those songs. Harmonically, the chords, the melodies, it's really kind of mind-blowing. But it's this weird phenomenon where, like, if you take a band with lesser songs, I won't say any names, but one starts with an M, and it's called Megadeth.
Metallica, oh, right.
Now, you take Megadeth, okay? Now, in my opinion, and I get it, a lot of Megadeth fans out there, I'm not trying to pick on you guys, but this is just, I'm trying to make an example here.
Sure.
To me, the songs are not very good. So when the songs aren't very good, what you end up doing, what your ear does, is you just start to focus on the technicality of the music.
Mm-hmm.
I can listen to Nick Menza play drums forever and find something to praise about because I absolutely adore him as a drummer.
Sure.
I love Dave Ellison's bass playing. I fucking love Marty Friedman. And I like Dave Mustaine's riffs, and I like his kind of bombastic, kind of like looser leads.
Yeah, for sure.
But I never get lost in the songs because the songs, in my opinion, are not very good. His voice is hard to listen to.
Sure.
Metallica is the exact opposite. Like the hook, I was like watching the Broken, Beaten, Scarred, and like all the hooks, like vocal hooks and like melody hooks in that song are so strong.
Mm-hmm.
And like all the hooks are being reinforced by the drums. And so to just sort of, that's what I focus on. That's what my ear goes towards is the song. So to just watch it all broken down and watch that dude play all that bass so clean.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit. I had no idea this stuff was going on.
Yeah, that song's no joke. I mean, there was a brief moment where we were considering doing that for the episode this week, but because of how busy, you know, the last couple of days have been, especially before leaving town,
No time. I see Kronos.
Kronos. I texted Clint. I was like, maybe I could just learn a simpler, you know, like No Remorse or whatever. Yeah, because I started learning Broken, Beaten, Scarred, and I was just like, I got to like the first verse and I was like, this is going to take me a lot longer than like an hour to learn, you know? So, but we'll get to it eventually.
Well, thank you, Chris, for sending that. And everyone go check out the Bass channel. And thanks again to Chris for, you know, he's been a kind of loyal supporter and patron for a long time. And, you know, he totally made Lunar Satan legitimate, as did you. And as did other listener, Brian King, who played drums on a couple of the songs. So
thank you.
Thank you, dudes. All right. Let's keep moving.
This email's from Ashley Large. Hey, Clint and Ethan. Someone has probably let you know already, but Bob Rock was interviewed on Andrew Shep's podcast. There's a little chunk of Metallica talk, but perhaps the most interesting thing is that he says there is Shaker on every song on the Black Album, specifically referencing Sad But True. I had a quick listen, and I immediately heard it once the main riff comes in. What the hell? Can't tell you how many times I've heard the song and never noticed. Cheers, Ash.
I'll tell you something else, that on the Black Album, that there's Shaker on every song. You don't hear it, okay? But if you mute it on the console, because when I put a Shaker's on the record, they were going like, percussion? And I said, so... And I can't hear it. And I said, well, yeah, but I'll turn them off. As soon as I turned it off, it changed the way it felt.
Yeah.
So the Shaker adds that kind of the swing that you're hearing Sad But True. But you can't hear it unless you hear it on headphones and really listen for it.
Yeah.
But if, you know, those are the things that I'm talking about. Same with harmonies.
Right.
You use it to move the song, not necessarily to gloss it over. Of course, you know, Queen does it in a different way, you know, but regularly, if, for me, the most part, it's really to move the track along.
Right. The first Audioslave record has percussion exactly like that, just very structural, but Lenny Castro gets inside of whatever drummer's groove he's playing with to the point where you don't hear it, but man, if you turn it off,
yes,
it just blows a hole in the groove. Not that, you know, those drummers need it, but it really lifts it.
Well, I mean, we can mildly elaborate on this kind of stuff. You know, we often talk about certain songs like, hey, this is a headphone record. Or, you know, when you are listening on headphones, you start to hear things you didn't notice before, and especially if someone points it out.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's something that I never knew that little factoid that there's Shaker on every single song. But once you, you know, it's kind of like, you know, when someone's like, hey, once you see this, you can't unsee it.
Yeah, and he talks about how, you know, it's so subtle. He's like, but when I, you know, I think when he says, which we have a clip of it that we're going to put in, but he says something like, he put it in and the guys were kind of against it. But then when he muted it, you could feel it was gone.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm a huge fan of that. Just 16th note, kind of, you know, texture. I put a Shaker in all my demos.
Yeah, Shaker. I mean, you know, our friend Nathan Thomas, who's mixed most of the cover all World Black and stuff. He's always gets excited when I put a tambourine in the chorus.
Yeah. Shakers, you know, and tambos are great for choruses.
Mm-hmm. And when you, like Bob Rock is mentioning, at first you're like, should that be there? But then when you mute it, even if you have it really low in the mix, and then all of a sudden you mute it and it's like, now something's missing.
Well, there's a phrase that we use a lot in record making that's called more felt than heard, where you'll add a texture, whether it's a percussion texture or whatever, but you feel it more in the mix than you actually hear it as a featured instrument or a featured stem. And yeah, you take it away and you can feel that something's not right. Mm-hmm. It's a glue. It's almost like glue.
If you want to hear featured tambourine, listen to most records in the 60s that were recorded in mono and then made stereo later. And the tambourine on the left, like...
totally.
Like, it's crazy.
Beatles are the worst offenders of that. And it's not really them. It's the engineers around them. Again, we will not slip into that talk. I will spare everybody.
Of course.
Because you know I could talk about this for a really long time.
Of course, yeah. Which that's what we do on the road.
I know that... you're welcome, by the way.
Hey, I don't mind. I love the Beatles.
I know that they did a whole day in Vancouver when they were doing overdubs, where there was a whole day with just Lars, where Bob Rock had an entire like percussion cartage. Like, Lars came in and there was a huge table with nothing but perk.
It was like the table from The Last Supper covered in percussion.
Exactly.
It was a lot.
So that's probably where that came from, you know? And Bob Rock was probably like loaded up. And by the way, I want to thank Ashley for bringing that interview to my attention, because it's a great interview. It's about 2.5 hours long. He talks about the payoff. He talks about his whole deal. He talks about Motley Crue, the Cult. And the Metallica talk is really great, because it's with Andrew Sheps, who's himself a producer and engineer. So it's a little inside baseball on record making and like sounds and engineering. But I love that shit. And if Paul hasn't seen that, he's going to love it. But I imagine he has seen it. Now, this last email is going to take us into the main discussion of Portals, Kirk's new instrumental EP coming out, and some of the speculation about it that I think is interesting. So this is from Patricia B. She says, what's up, brothers? Hope you're both well. And Paul, if you're there.
Paul? Paul, are you here? Paul?
You know.
Not here.
I hear the sound of a car, and my heart just starts beating faster, because I'm like, it might be Paul. But it's not him. It's an Amazon package on my porch. It's not.
Now, if you hear the sound of a motorcycle, I mean, That might send you into cardiac arrest.
Right, but then I look and it's just a Hell's Angel coming to because he made me a pie. Because the Hell's Angels are nice and they like to bake.
They like to bake. Yeah, they're big bakers.
You know what I'm saying? Okay, she says, just came across a post on the boys' socials about Kirk's solo project. Okay, and this is her speculation. She says, it made me think back to your Blacklist Part 4 episode. As excited as I am to hear it, my initial reaction was to think this could be the beginning of the end. My pessimistic brain is imagining that a conversation was had between the four and management to discuss wrapping the whole thing up slowly, which is kind of understandable at their age, but as fans, we want them to keep touring till they're 100, right? Hopefully I'm wrong, and this is just another outlet for Kirk's creativity. I'll be interested to hear what you guys think. She says, it's also quite sad to see the most of the comments under the post related to Jason's departure. The quote saying, so you kicked him out of the band for this, and yet it's okay for Kirk to do it. People seem to be forgetting that 20-odd years have passed, and James in particular is a different person altogether, on a journey to healing, and that Jason chose to leave rather than being forced out. Loving the show as always. Keep up the great work. You are eternally appreciated. Horns up, Trisha from Plymouth, UK, New Jersey.
Eternally appreciated.
For the Kronos will eternally bless you with time.
Kronos would pause the time.
As your beanstalk climbs into the stratosphere where giants make playthings of our hopes and dreams, we shall eternally appreciate you gathering once a week, even though your schedules are quite busy to talk about Metallica, darkly, muchly.
You see, oh man.
Okay, so
I have a few thoughts here.
Okay, can I read the press release first before we just really dive in? So this is the press release. I guess it's a press release. This is what came out. This is what got emailed to all of us. First of all, I love the cover.
It's cool.
I don't know what it is. It looks like an aerial shot of like a waterway. I don't really love the fonts. It's hard to read Kirk Hammett and to read Portals. I would have maybe made those a little clearer. Maybe not this kind of weird gold yellow color, maybe a wider color. Okay, so here's what it says. This is Kirk Hammett on the album. He says, initially, before I even had the idea for a solo EP, I was inspired by the need to create some sort of soundtrack music to accompany the Kirk Hammett collection for the first It's Alive exhibition at the Peabody Essex Museum in Salem, Massachusetts, 2017. I wanted to conceive music to play on a loop in the background as people walked through the exhibit. I sat down one night with a progression, and before I knew it, all the parts were there for one of the songs, which is called Maiden and the Monster.
Oh, yes.
The initial concept for Portals started with that one song. Following that, I realized I could create different soundtrack moments. These songs are what I call audio cinematic. I'm creating sounds and pieces of music for the movies playing in my head. Hopefully they'll create movies in other people's heads in a similar fashion. I think all of that's really beautifully worded.
That's great. And I totally understand that, having put out an instrumental record of my own.
Exactly.
Like that was the goal. It was for my art exhibit, of course. no, but it was, you know, like, A, I like this kind of music, and I just want to create kind of an atmosphere, kind of a mood, you know, to play in the background of whatever, whether it's an art exhibit or to someone's home. So I get that, man. Me and Kirk have traveled through the same portal.
So this says, true to its title, Portals is a collection of gateways to musical and psychic destinations.
Ooh.
Everyone needs to have their mescaline ready, I guess, for this EP. He says, recorded around the world from LA to Paris to Hawaii, Portals is the result of Kirk's life's journeys and an invitation to tap into your own inner world. Heavily influenced by classical music, soundtracks, horror movies, and maybe a little Ennio Morricone. Which, of course, we love that. It says Kirk wanted the EP to span the decades and touch upon all the horror he loves. The idea behind the EP was to have all the songs flow into each other, so he relied on a whole cast of his friends to record the four songs. So this is where we learn a little bit about who's involved. Produced by Kirk, Portals is comprised of the songs Maiden and the Monster and The Djinn on side A, followed by High Plains Drifter and The Incantation on side B. The latter two, this is interesting, co-written with one Mr. Edwin Outwater.
We've heard of him.
Metal Up Your Podcast alum. Him and I were texting about it yesterday, actually.
Yeah.
He says, who you may remember from SNM2, Outwater also contributed keyboards and led the orchestral players from the LA Philharmonic on Portals.
Cool.
Other familiar names amongst the Portals players include drummers John Theodore, Kirk's fellow wedding band member, and Abraham Laboriel. And check this out, Greg Fiddleman on bass.
Amazing.
Emmy-winning arranger Blake Neely, and of course, Bobby Rock. Portals will be available to order on the Met Store and the Probity UK shop on Saturday, April 23rd, and it's going to be out for Record Store Day for those of you who are interested in that.
Hell
and,
yeah. And it looks I'll like, pick up a copy.
It looks like there are a couple of like interesting variants of colored vinyl.
Awesome. So, well, I'll tell you what I'm excited about is John Theodore. He's the current drummer of Queens of the Stone Age.
Okay.
He also had this really, he made this really rad EP with Zach De La Roca called One Day as a Lion.
Okay.
That's fucking badass.
I've heard of
check that.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
He's one of the most badass drummers out there, man.
I fucking love Queens of the Stone Age. I don't know their stuff that well. I have the one big out. I have an album called Rated R and an album called Songs for the Deaf, but
yeah,
I'll occasionally put on like a live Queens of the Stone Age show and just watch it just because I love their guitar tones. I love their attitude. Those dudes are killers.
If you watch any live footage of them from a festival or whatever in the last, I'm going to take a while, I guess, to say 5 to 6 years, John Theodore's probably the drummer.
Man, I love
the
drums.
He is so good.
Queens of the Stone Age is kind of an overlooked rock band, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, me and you and Johnny Sword are our beloved bass player who likes to rock himself. In fact, we had a nice night on the bus, a little BNO, Boys Night Out, but on the bus. Boys Night Out on the bus, whatever that acronym is.
Or is that Boys Night In?
Boys Night In on the bus.
Or BDI.
We watched a Stone Temple Pilots concert from 2010.
It was, which was really, really
good.
Dude,
I've been jamming STP all fucking week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I've got Purple on cassette, and that's made its rotation into HQ4. So,
well, but we like to have a lot of conversations about rock music. Is it dead? Where's it going? What's going on? Who's going to be the next, you know, whatever, the next Foo Fighters, the next STP? Is that even a thing anymore? A band we don't talk about enough when those combos is Queens of the Stone Age.
Mm-hmm. They're a great band.
They
man.
Fucking
really good.
Rock.
Yeah.
Man.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you said you had some thoughts. So that we've set up this album. So
yeah,
and Patricia, you know, has given us a speculation about a little bit of a sad speculation about it, maybe perhaps being a sign of the end times. What say you, Ethan?
I'm sorry, Patricia, but I'm going to disagree with a sign of the end times. And this is here's kind of my reasoning is that Kirk mentions that it's recorded all around the world. My guess is that when there's downtime, he takes advantage of the recording rig in the tuning room.
Hmm.
You know, if, you know, he comes in or he's known to come in earlier than a lot of people in the band. And so my guess is like, hey, engineer, you know, or maybe, hey, Wes, can you hit record on that for me? I need to lay this down or I already have the drums done. I need to do some overdubs before the guys come in. So that's one theory is that he's kind of casually recorded it. So it's not like this thing like, you know, like what Jason was doing. Where it was going to become an actual band that tours and make multiple records and stuff like that. This is just a 4-song EP. I mean, who knows? He could have been doing this over the last 4 years, 5 years on the World Wired cycle, you know, and finally kind of got it all pieced together. So, I don't know. I don't get the feeling at all that it's a sign of the band coming in for landing.
What's interesting is I'm thinking about, you know, the infamous day that James confronted Jason about the Echo Brain thing, which they had already had a discussion about side projects in the mid-90s when he had a band called Irate.
Right.
But this is different because Q Prime wanted to manage Echo Brain. It apparently got some heat and had some legs. And the day that James confronted Jason was the day they filmed the Black Album, classic albums.
Oh, the classic albums, yeah.
But the thing that James asked him, he said, are you going to have merch? That was like a sticking point.
That was the straw that broke.
Well, because I guess for James it was like, so it's real. You know, you're gonna play shows, you're gonna go on a tour, and you're gonna sell merch. And that's for him was like maybe the symbol of it being real and therefore stealing energy or whatever heat away from Metallica.
Yeah, yeah.
Which you know, I was really pleasantly surprised by that Echo Brain record. I think it's really a really fucking cool like '90s album. But it wasn't going to fuck with Metallica. I mean,
of course not. Nothing's going to fuck with Metallica. There's nothing that anyone in that band could do, even if James did a solo record, that would overshadow Metallica.
I 100% agree. Now, to your point about it being I'm going to wait to weigh in on Patricia's doomy speculation, because I think I'm more on her side than you. I don't think he recorded it in tuning rooms. I think he... It says he from Los Angeles to Paris to Hawaii. So he lives in Hawaii.
Right.
And I think they had to do it in L.A. with the 2 songs that Edwin did because the L.A. Philharmonic was on it.
Right. Hawaii makes sense, obviously. And then, I mean, I'm speculating too. But, yeah, maybe when they were on the road and had, you know, maybe, you know how they kind of do 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe when they finish somewhere near or in Europe, anywhere, and Kirk decided to spend those 2 weeks, book a studio in Paris. You know.
Maybe he has a home there. You know, I mean, these guys are mega rich. I mean, these dudes have multiple homes everywhere, or wherever they want. I think he, you know, I take him at his word when he talks about he wanted to make music. Like, you've been to museums before where they're like playing like ambient music or whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
I could definitely see him being like getting that idea. The thing that I mean, I need to hear it, of course. And by the way, I'm excited to hear it. There's been some kind of ugly comments about what it might sound like, and is he going to bring his wah pedal? And I guess he didn't lose his phone. And I get all that. That's kind of fun to tease all that through the Metallica threads and all that. I'm just actually just excited to hear it. I think it's really cool that he's doing it.
Yeah, for sure.
I do feel like four songs is not ambitious enough for me. Like,
I mean, unless they're real long or something. I don't know.
That's true. I mean, it says that
could be.
It says that two are on side A and two on side B, so maybe they're like actually long explorations. But maybe an EP is like a softer thing too. Like, maybe if he came out with a full blown like full length 10-song solo project, maybe it being an EP makes it a little more like it fits into the Metallica world more. It doesn't seem so separate.
Right, yeah. And I'm sure there's still going to be negative comments no matter what, because that just always exists in today's day and age. And there'll be people that are like, it doesn't sound like Metallica. It's like, well, no shit. I mean, look at Kirk. You know, he already explained it's taking on this journey through a portal and all that stuff. We
speculated years ago about what solo albums would sound like from these dudes, and I think we said at the time that his would have a lot of guests, and it would be like a kind of jazzy, you know, it would be some of his influences that are not very Metallica-ish. Like, it wouldn't be the Judas Priest, Scorpions, you know, the stuff that he loves.
UFO.
UFO, exactly. That's a big one for him. But would be more of his kind of more, I guess, adjacent influences.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think this is great. He's combining his love for cinema, for horror films. He talks about being influenced by Ennio Morricone, that it's very soundtracky.
I love that.
It sounds like the guests aren't like doing vocals. We got Fiddleman on bass. He got Edwin Outwater involved, who is a Stone Cold genius.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, this is about as good a situation as I could have actually asked for a solo effort from Kirk. And I think it has a high probability of being successful and being a really cool artistic project.
I'm looking forward to it. And you know that we'll do a listen through and commentary once that comes out.
And again, I fucking love the title and I love the cover. I don't like the font. It's just hard to see. Now, of it being a sign of the end times.
What are your thoughts on it? I see him releasing this and people bringing up the whole Jason thing from 20 plus years ago as much like Trisha said, was James is a completely different person now. He's not the same guy that was giving Jason shit for the Echo Brain stuff. You know, they all kind of have their own thing. And I think at this point in their career, they're all pushing 60 years old, that when there's downtime away from Metallica, it's like, hey, do your thing. Whatever. Metallica train will keep rolling for as long as it can.
To me, one of the most tragic things about the entire Jason Echo Brain James thing is that he seems to have really done a 180 and done a lot of work on himself really soon after. Like, I think Jason leaving, we've talked about this ad nauseum, but Jason leaving was the sacrificial, it was what it took to really, to really wake those guys up to kind of, you know, their grips on the band and how they were viewing the band unhealthily, mostly James.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think Lars gave a shit what Jason was up to. But it's just so tragic that there was that window there where there was a moment where James was like, I get it. I was holding on too tight. I should have let you be more creative. But it's just too much had happened. It was like, and you know, of course, in hindsight, it's like, I'm really glad Rob's there. And I think over the last 18 months to 2 years, I've really made a lot of peace with the Jason thing, and I don't even know if Jason would have been great in the band, you know, moving forward. I think Rob has been the best thing for the band.
Rob's really
think so, and Jason really seems to have been pretty happy with his decision. So,
well, and I mean, even though Jason's out, you know, he'll have to do like the Chop House band and all that stuff. Like, not that people want him to do that necessarily, but all, you know, we want the dude to be happy. You know, it'd be a bummer if Jason was like, you know, like super depressed and like all you do is think about the past. I shouldn't have left. And so to me, that would be a bummer.
Yeah, and he, you know, I mean, he tried. He did that Newstead project, and he really sank a lot of his own money into it. He put a great band together, and they really tried to do the thing, but he ultimately, it didn't make sense, you know?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Which we still have to review that album.
Yeah, for sure.
So tying it into Jason's tough, I mean, I think James even changed within a year of the Jason thing. So throw 20 years on that, I think James has definitely mellowed out. I don't think he mm-hmm. is worried anymore. But
also keep in mind, too, that the around that time, that was at the height of his addiction, too.
Sure, right.
You know, I mean, this is like at the very tail end of him like kind of hitting rock bottom and getting into rehab.
It was the height of his substance abuse or whatever his thing was. And it was also the height of, I mean, Metallica at the 90s, you know? Metallica just destroyed the 90s. Whether you like that material or not, they were the MTV heavy band. They were the preeminent hard rock and heavy metal band of the 90s, period.
Yeah,
period. Who else would have been? I mean, Pantera, I guess, maybe.
But they weren't getting the coverage of Metallica.
But they weren't getting like MTV mainstream coverage. I mean, you may not like Fuel, but I remember this because I was at the height of my Metallica love as in the first stage of my life. The last 6 years of this podcast would represent the height of my Metallica love as an adult. But
right.
I remember it, dude. Fuel was on MTV like every fucking hour.
Oh, yeah.
And then if Fuel wasn't on there, Memory Remains was on there every hour.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And they were just always on MTV. It was fucking awesome.
They dominated it, yeah.
But here's my point. Even though James has mellowed out, which is no doubt he has, because of this, the past with this issue, there's no way that when Kirk wanted to do this that he wasn't maybe a little trepidatious about like, okay, I need to let the boys know what I want to do. I need to make sure everything's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? There's like no way that their history with this issue wasn't in the ethos, right?
Yeah, it had to come up. I mean, obviously it's getting posted on Metallica.com and all their official socials.
They're backing it.
Yeah, they're backing it. So yeah, but I mean, it's still a business and all that stuff. So I'm sure, you know, Kirk had all these ideas going around and maybe he started recording some demos or whatever the case may be. Surely he sat down with the dudes or sent an email out and be like, hey, dudes, I've been working on these songs, blah, blah, blah. They're not from Metallica, but I'd love to put out a solo thing. Is everyone cool with that? You know, and it's like, yeah, dude, cool. We'll do what you want, man.
Totally. It might have been a very short conversation.
Yeah.
But I know that I'm just trying to imagine if I was in that boat and knowing how cool Kirk is, you know, he's kind of always been the leveler, the neutralizer,
mm-hmm.
the dude in the band that glues people. And Rob's like that, too. Honestly, man, in a way that Jason really never was. Jason was a very pointed, kind of intense force.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, he brought a lot of magic sauce to the band. Ain't no doubt about that. My favorite era of the band.
Yeah, of course.
But he was very pointy and, like, intense and, like, could really, almost in a way, disruptive. And that energy mm-hmm. was good when they were in their early 30s and becoming bloated rock stars. You know, Lars talks about Jason was, like, the guy that would keep me humble because Jason was a Metallica fan.
Yeah, for sure.
So he was always the guy around being like, you know, representing that energy.
Yeah.
But Kirk is the sort of leveler. I could definitely see him being like, I just want to make sure everyone's cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a project.
Absolutely.
It's just four songs. Sure. I did it for my museum. It's instrumental. He's probably not taking it on tour. Will there be merch?
Will there be merchandising, please? Well, another thing to think about, too, is that, I mean, you know, non-music related, I mean, think about, you know, just the side things that have happened. I mean, with Kirk, you know, he had that whole art show museum thing, different exhibit things. It's like, to me, I mean, that might even take up more time than him doing this.
I mean, I'm looking at the comments now. Let me just give you a smattering of the comments.
Oh, please, let's hear it.
I will say the very first comment says we love Kirk, but after that, there's not a lot of people saying things like awesome. Can't wait to hear it. This right. is cool. Wah, 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 wah. Resume. Wait, this is illegal. Took a long time for some Metallica member to release something. That's for you, Jason. So Kirk's out of the band. I guess Kirk finally found his phone. Jason is screaming. Is Jason on bass? Wah. I thought the guys weren't allowed to do solo stuff.
Oh my God.
They're kicking Kirk out. They're kicking Kirk out. He was a great lead guitarist for those 40 years. I heard this story before. 80 minutes of wah. James not mad? It's like the wah album. Damn, we all know he's going to be fired. Did James know about this? Is Jason Newsted going to do the same thing? Oh, wait. And justice for Jason. He wanted to do side projects. Didn't y'all kick someone out of the band for something like this? I mean, these poor bastards.
Jeez. I mean, do you have nothing better to do than to comment on that shit? And also, all those comments, it's the same annoying, tired argument as the Napster thing.
Sure.
Where it's just like, okay.
Lazy.
it's been doing whatever 21 years since Jason left the band or something. Like, oh my gosh, they're going to kick him out now. James wouldn't allow this. It's like, oh my God. Do you even follow the band?
It's a huge spiritual problem. I think the internet has just tuned everybody to high snark. And now like what social currency is like snark and dunking, mm-hmm. and everyone thinks they're a fucking comedian. And let me tell you, most people aren't that funny.
Mm-hmm.
Being funny ain't easy.
That's right.
So it's just it annoys me, honestly. I get it. I get it. It's easy to snark. It's easier. It's just easier. Yeah. It's easier to try to dunk than to be like, I think this project's really cool and I'm looking forward to it. And and I know how hard it is to make a thing. And I don't think four songs is necessarily ambitious, but I think the project in general, you know, a cinematic, horror inspired, classically influenced instrumental project from the guitar player of the greatest metal band of all time is fucking cool.
And you know what? To those people that, you know, make those shitty comments, like, you go make something.
Go make something.
You make something like Kirk's about to do, or that we do, or whatever. Anybody, you know what I'm saying? Like,
go make anything.
If you have any creative bone in your body, go make something and put it out in the world, and then let's see how that goes for you. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like, there's even stuff that, you know, like, I actually noticed this the other day, as me and a friend who's recently started like a YouTube channel for vinyl stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We were texting about how, you know, let the shitty comments start rolling in. You know, there's always someone that hates what you do. Like when I did those little quarantine covers with video and everything in 2020, I recently went back and was just like kind of watching them just for fun, because, you know, it was just a fun time and have fun always. And I noticed on one of them, you know, I got the singer of one of my old bands to sing on this Operation Ivy kind of ska punk tune. He's wearing a Wu-Tang shirt, singing an Operation Ivy song, and he's got like a Clash poster in the background. And someone's comment literally said, "An Operation Ivy or Operation Ivy and Wu-Tang, please don't ever post on YouTube again." I'm like, really? Because of someone chose to wear in a video.
Yeah, because someone has the audacity to like a fucking awesome group like Wu-Tang.
Like, you know what? You're right, dude. I should just give up completely because my friend decided to wear a Wu-Tang shirt.
Oh, dude, we've had people on our YouTube channel tell us we should die and shit.
Yeah, it's just insane. It's like, I don't know. I mean, this is why it's easy to get caught up in comment sections as well for me, as it's easy to avoid them. When I happen to dip in, I get way too sucked in, but I'm pretty good at avoiding them because I know what I'm in store for.
When I saw the comments... Honestly, man, in some areas of my life, I'm just really simple, and I didn't mm-hmm. even think about it. I didn't even think people would be mean in comments. I don't know. I don't know. Or maybe I'm just slowly going insane or something.
I guess I'll end that portion of this by saying this. Imagine being the kind of person that puts out a comment completely judging something before it has even been released.
I think people just are tuned to snark and they think they're funny. And they're just not. And being snarky is fucking easy and lazy. But when I started to see that the comments were kind of that vein, I was like, oh, fuck, of course they were going to do that. And it made me wonder if like their social media team were like, okay, Kirk, we're going to promote Portals.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you got to promote your shit, you know, like, you know, and you're going to put the Metallica, cause they're promoting it on Metallica's socials.
Oh yeah.
So, okay. You're going to actually put the Metallica brand and machine behind your solo project. How fucking awesome is that? But you got to believe, unless Kirk is kind of surrounded with sycophants or something, but you got to believe someone goes, hey, by the way, Kirk, just FYI, probably going to be a lot of talk about wah pedals and about Jason.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to be dunking on you. Is that cool? Now, Kirk could either be like, oh, Jesus, really? Do we even want to do this? Or Kirk could be like, dude, I've been being dunked on ever since I was in the band. So I don't.
Yeah, he's been dunked on ever since they fired Dave Mustaine. So he's right. He's probably really callous to it. And ever since all the Jason stuff happened back then, it's like, and I mean, listen, I'm sure you could find the most average plain Kirk Instagram post and scroll through the comments and find, oh, wah, 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 you know, like, it doesn't matter what it is. Like, hey, here's a nice photo of a sunset. Check this out. Love, Kirk Hammett. Is your wah pedal there with you? You know what I mean? There's always going to be that person. So he's probably way used to it at this point.
I mean, he did do his own wah off. I mean, he's in on the joke.
I have stood on top of that wah pedal myself.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's at the Dunlop office here in Nashville.
Which, that's the only way to really do it. The only way to really combat it is to just get in on it and have fun with it, you know,
exactly.
Always, as you do.
Yeah.
But it does, there is something kind of like spiritually really like empty about how negative it can be, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
I just get, I guess, you know, sometimes I kind of get kind of tore up where someone makes a comment about something that they haven't heard yet or whatever, you know?
It's lazy and annoying.
It's like somebody, I remember years and years ago, I played a solo show at the End here in Nashville, and someone, some review in like the Nashville scene described, which was basically a punk rock set, described it as like rehashed Christian ska.
Wow.
And it was like an online thing someone sent me, and I straight up commented, and I was like, you clearly didn't watch any bit of my set.
Right.
There was zero about it that was ska.
It's like they just had an idea about you because of maybe some bands you've been in.
Yeah, they're like, oh, he was in that ska band, the Supertones, so I'm just going to write this.
Oh, my God.
It's like you didn't even watch. So it's the same. Yeah. So to me, it's the same thing when people are commenting. There's like these little mini reviews of someone that hasn't even heard something yet or seen something yet aside from a EP cover.
And by the way, also couldn't do what you did if their entire fucking life depended on it.
Yeah. Right.
It's pretty annoying. And I'm not saying like, I think there's a place for like criticism and art criticism, film criticism, music criticism. It just better be good. Dude, have you ever heard me talk about Pauline Kael?
No.
She was a big film critic in the like 70s and 80s. She's like the greatest film critic ever. Reading her work is like reading a great novel. She was an amazing writer and an amazing thinker. And what she wrote about movies, whether she liked them or, and I disagree with her on several movies.
Sure.
But it was almost an art form in and of itself. I like good criticism. I don't like lazy, stupid, you know, dunky, snarky bullshit.
Of course, yeah. If I'm going to ever put out something musically and someone's going to write a bad review on it or just have a couple negative things to say, you better make me think, he's kind of right, or if I disagree, at least word it in a way that sounds intelligent and it sounds like you actually listened to it, you know? Like that's where it's like I've read reviews on albums and whatever many times where it's like I don't think this person really paid attention.
Yeah.
You know, they're just trying to get some words out to meet their quota of whatever they have to do for their job or whatever the situation is. But
yeah.
Anyways, listen to us, two old men yelling at the clouds.
Well, I mean, I'm excited for Kirk. I'm excited for the project. I'm choosing not to see it as some sort of omen of the end. I think, you know, I've mentioned the last several weeks, I think they're maybe moving towards a 10 to 15 year plan of at least ramping down touring. But I think we have another really good cycle to get through. We have another, I think there's going to be another album that's going to be great. I think there's going to be a tour around it. Now, will they be able to do stadiums twice like they did on Hardwired? I don't know if they can capture that magic again. To me, the last 4 years was almost like a Black Album level peak. I mean, obviously high, but it represents a different, the Hardwired cycle seemed to me to be a higher peak than even the Death Magnetic cycle.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that if they were to try to attempt stadiums, it would have to be a lineup that was like as exciting as the Big Four shows or something, you know?
Yeah. Which, I mean, they did have Ghost. I mean, Ghost and I guess Avenged Sevenfold, but I don't really have a good pulse on how big that band is.
Right.
But Ghost was a pretty big draw, I mean, for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that when they were going to do Australia, they were going to have Slipknot, right? So
yeah, I was about to bring up Slipknot. That would be a really good, if they were going to try to do stadiums again, you know, a band like Slipknot that's already selling out arenas, you know?
Dude, what if it was a band like Foo Fighters?
I mean, shit. You know, Dave Grohl's a fan, so.
Because I remember when the Stones were touring in the mid-90s, and there were some, like, huge bands that opened for them, like Guns and shit. Like, like bands that would never open for anybody unless it was the Rolling Stones. Like, Alice in Chains opened for them and stuff when they were selling arenas, you know?
Yeah.
So it'd be cool if they did a tour where, like, they could really get a huge band in their own right to be part of the bill.
How about this lineup?
Yep, let's hear it.
Three, I'm going to say, it could be more. Let's just say a three-band bill for a stadium show.
Okay.
Opener, Queens of the Stone Age,
Jesus,
Foo Fighters, and then Metallica.
I mean, take my money. Take all my money. I'm going to go to multiple shows, and this is going to be a really memorable tour for sure. So whether they do that or not, who knows? Maybe they'll, you know, there's also something to be said about taking out smaller bands that need the exposure, like Bokassa, and I think all that's really cool too, but needless to say.
Rage Against the Machine.
Dude.
Do
they still play together?
Pre-pandemic, they've got a couple, not breakups, but hiatuses and reunions.
Yeah.
Right before the pandemic.
They booked a tour, right?
Yeah, they announced a 2020, like a full-on arena tour. It was like, holy shit, they're going to do it again. And all those dudes can still play and all that shit. But, I mean, imagine like the stadium run and Rage Against the Machine as one of the openers. I don't know if they would do it. They can sell arenas on their own, but that would be pretty badass.
Also, I'm just thinking like an hour of like political hard rock. That would be a little exhausting as well. Foo mm-hmm. Fighters would be fun.
It would be fun.
Queens of Stone Age would be fun, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I do think there's another album and another cycle. So I really do think this is just something cool that Kirk put together. He got the blessing from the band. It sounds like they're rolling it out, you know, happily. I think he did it right, man. I mean, just knowing that Edwin's involved at the level he is, he co-wrote two of the songs and he got the LA Philharmonic on it. I think it's going to be pretty fucking epic.
Right. And let's also not forget too. I mean, they've been in like, you know, obviously Black Album promotion. There's all these different deals with like, the kissification of Metallica, you know, for them to have something like this that is Metallica adjacent to promote is cool, I think. And it probably buys them a little more time in regards to what the next record is going to be and when's that going to get announced or teased or whatever. So I think Kirk's EP is all part of like this grand plan as they go along until the next album cycle.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. I'm excited for them. I'm excited to have something different to talk about other than the Black Album, which I love. I love the Black Album, but we really did it. And I don't know. It'll be interesting to see when it actually comes out. And like, I'm sure they're going to start doing press, or Kirk will do press, or, you know, people will start maybe telling the story of Portals and to see how much of this we got right. And of course, time will tell with, you know, with the band itself. But there's definitely going to be another album and another tour. So I think we're all going to sit tight. Here's my advice to all of you out there. Enjoy these next few years.
Always. Just
enjoy the next 5 years of this band being active. Being on television, putting out box sets, you know, playing Battery on fucking Jimmy Kimmel in 2022. It's amazing. I think we all just need to really cherish it and enjoy it. And we'll all do it together. You know, we'll ride it out together. That's what's fun
Absolutely.
About it.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, let's split. Let's let everyone go. We appreciate all of you out there, especially the patrons, but any of you who listen or take the time to leave a review, which by the way, if you haven't left a review on iTunes, maybe go ahead and do that. On Spotify, you fucking demon. You can now leave a review over there, which obviously helps people, you know, get hip to Melody Podcast. And if you want to come see us on the road, the socials are the easiest way to see what we're up to. We're going to be in Philly. Where are we at this weekend?
We're in Philadelphia, Silver Springs, which is basically Baltimore, and then Cincinnati. But that'll all be in the past. But
you'll
time
need a time machine.
Out, so.
Yeah,
you'll need a time machine, or if you climb the beanstalk and there is some sort of time portal, we can take you back 3 days, then you can come to those shows.
Here's the good news: if you find that portal, maybe it's up in the clouds with the Giants, or maybe it's a time machine that you built in your garage. We'll put you on the guest list, but you need the time machine first.
Yeah, that's the only trick. But once you can master that, then we're good.
All right. Well, we do love you guys. Take care of yourselves. Take care of your families. We'll see you on the flippity floppity. Peace.
Adios.
Hey everyone, Clinton Ethan here, and we want to tell you about a little thing called Patreon. Patreon is an easy and interactive way to support the people who make the things that you love.
For as little as $5 a month, you can ensure that Metal Up Your Podcast can continue to grow in quality and content. That's equivalent to a cup of coffee or a beer once a month.
Not only is it easy and affordable, but we've made it a priority since day one to give back to our Patreon community. We've given away deluxe box sets, rare vinyl, Black and Whiskey,
concert tickets to SNM2 and Slane Castle,
all four of our Cover Our World Black and EPs, 26 quarantine covers, and Lunar Satan demos,
invitations to exclusive Zoom happy hours, the ability to ask our guests like Jay Weinberg of Slipknot, Lizzie Hale, and members of the Metallica crew your very own questions,
and eligibility for our Metal Tales series, where you can be a guest on Metal Up Your Podcast and tell us all about a notable Metallica show you've been to.
Subscribe to Patreon today and immediately get access to years worth of bonus content.
Thank you for supporting the people who make the things that you love. Peace.
Adios.
I can't talk about it anymore. It's giving me a headache.
Here, take two of these.
Ah, Nuprin. Little. Yellow. Different.
If you were our advisor, what would you say? Then I would say, delete that.